I'm going to invite Rich Chafee, who you all know well, to come up, and he's going to share a story about an epiphany that I think changed his life. And then my part of the service will be doing kind of a commentary on what that story seemed to tell me from the six sources that we're talking about today. So, Rich, please come on up.
And please, I can share this story with you. I had tucked it away in my memory bank and hadn't thought about it much, and it happened so long ago. And I guess it does qualify as an epiphany. It was a sudden revelation in my life, and it, in its own way, it was life-changing. So I'd like to read my story at this time. Can you all hear me okay?
Yes.
I know Karina's always saying, speak up. Well, I was 19 years old, and I had just completed 8 weeks of Army Infantry basic training at Aberdeen Proving Grounds in Maryland in the fall of 1953. And like all such training, the emphasis was learning how to survive in warfare, which meant learning how to kill and not be killed. I was back home in eastern Pennsylvania on a long weekend pass, visiting my mother. So to relax and unwind a bit, I decided I would go small game hunting, which I had done many times. And I went to my uncle's farmland in Berks County's Ole Valley, a beautiful area, and I had hunted there often as a young boy, with my dad, with my uncles, a rite of passage in a way, and a treasured memory. It was a crisp autumn day as I ambled across an open field in search of some small game, perhaps a pheasant or a rabbit. And for a while it didn't seem to matter that I hadn't seen anything to shoot. In fact, I was aware only of the feelings of peacefulness and calm that I had not experienced in months. But then suddenly, I caught sight of a rabbit darting from a thicket and right in front of me across my path. It was an easy target, so without any hesitation, I reflexively aimed my gun and shot. And then it struck me, in that moment, just how easy it was to pull the trigger, how final, and there was no taking it back. I slowly approached the rabbit, lying still in the grass. I picked it up, cradled it in my hands. Its small, limp body was warm and soft, its brown eyes still open. I was overcome with remorse, knowing that I had invaded the rabbit's place, and on that beautiful fall day, I had taken the rabbit's life, all in the name of sport. I never hunted again.
Thank you, Rich. It's a powerful story. A few weeks ago, and I don't really remember, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever, I did an introduction to the six sources of Unitarian Universalism. At that time, for those of you who remember, I called it the gemstone religion, where the six sources represented six facets of a gemstone, all pointing in different directions to a center that is invisible and unknown and mysterious. Each of the sources is vital to our understanding of the sacred, the rhythms of the world and universe, and how we emotionally, spiritually, and physically evolve and grow over time. What we learn as people comes from our insights and understanding of each of those six sources. You don't just pick one and say, I don't care about the others, but all six have messages of wisdom for us to share. So what I'd like to do is use Rich's story as an example. Any errors of understanding the impact of his story are mine and not his. I'll repeat each source aloud and then say some thoughts about they might reflect Rich's experience and the consequences. And by the way, on the back of your program are the six sources in case you want to read them again. But I will read each one. Direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder, affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces which create and uphold life. So what stayed with me when I read Rich's story, when he sent it to me, was that picture or image of Rich going slowly over to pick up the body of the rabbit. And it made me think of the preciousness and mystery of life itself, in whatever form it manifests itself. One moment, life, the next moment, death. And hear how his feelings of peace and calm earlier in the story as he ambled through the woods was a direct experience of the natural world that gives us peace and healing if we are prepared to embrace it. The killing of the rabbit abruptly showed another sense, a set of feelings, having invaded the rabbit's space and killed an innocent being. Second source. Words and deeds of prophetic women and men which challenge us to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and a transforming power of love. So I had to wrestle with this one a bit because I had to ask myself the question, was the reflexive act of taking aim and shooting a rabbit evil? Not necessarily. People around the world still hunt and fish and kill to survive and live. Are they evil? I don't think so. However, there are those who abuse animals or torture them or use them for killing sporting events. In my mind, that is evil. I felt in the reading that there was a transformational moment from the rabbit as object, something to hunt and kill, to a sentient being worthy of its own love and life. It existed just because it was, and it was a value. The third source, wisdom from the world's religions, which inspires us in our ethical and spiritual life. Excuse me. Many of the world's religions put a high premium on not killing. The Ten Commandments include a command, you do not kill. The first of the Buddhist precepts is not to kill other beings. Now, it doesn't mean that we don't kill. Every day we kill countless bacteria, insects, and animals, not by evil intention, but by simply being alive. And what it seems to me that Rich learned a powerful lesson about those rules of life, do not kill by intention. Yes, we will kill other beings by accident or sometimes necessity, but we don't make a habit of it of going out and saying, okay, today I'm going to kill everything in my path. We don't do that. To me, Rich's ethical and spiritual life evolved in that epiphany at 19 years of age, when that aha moment became a new life story and then a rule of life that he followed thereafter. Fourth source, Jewish and Christian teachings, which call us to respond to God's love by loving our neighbors as ourselves. Well, loving our neighbors includes loving the natural world, including its creatures of earth and sky and sea. We now, as a civilization, are learning more about not just the value of other living creatures as economy or simply food source, but also their right to exist alongside us just because they exist. Example, the efforts to save threatened species is a vivid example of caring for beings in nature because they are deserving of worth and love because they are. Forests being cut down by clear cut now are not as popular as they were 50 years ago because we realize that they have a value much more than an economic value of wood. In destroying forests or killing animals without reason or necessity, we diminish others and also ourselves. Fifth source. Humanist teachings, which counsel us to heed the guidance of reason and the results of science and warn us against idolatries of the mind and spirit. Now, Rich mentioned aiming and shooting the gun in reflex because it was an easy target. And I suspect it was almost automatic. What I suggest that happened afterwards was his recognition that he no longer wanted to take the lives of other creatures, whether in warfare or hunting. And what I wonder is, if someone who didn't worry about rational insight and self-awareness would have simply picked up the dead rabbit and kept hunting for sport, is that wrong? I don't think so. But I do think that there is a point, if we are prepared for it, there is a point when we learn how to ethically and spiritually move beyond hunting to kill just for sport. Quote, I never hunted again. I think children in particular are astonished when they accidentally kill an animal. I've heard many people say that it was as children that they only recognized the fragility of life after a beloved pet died or if they killed an animal by accident. Here's an example from my own life, and the people who brought me up had died many years ago, but their son, who's in his 80s, is still alive, and he lives part of the time in Maine and part of the time in Virginia. And I checked with him to make sure that I remembered this reasonably clearly, because it was a turning point in my life that I still remember. And he said he remembered it too, because he was home. I was about 3 years old, and we had lobsters to cook for a meal. If you live in Maine, you have to have lobster. My foster parents, being the humorous people they were, put a live lobster on the floor, and it moved around, waving its antennae and its claws, and what Bob, the son, said to me, that I was just struck with amazement that this creature, whatever it was, I didn't know what a lobster was moving and waving its antennae, and I thought it was pretty good. Well, eventually, we had to cook the lobsters for dinner, and my lobster, and being 3 years old, you really don't know how to shell a lobster, let alone eat it. They took the shell apart very carefully, and then we ate. Well, after dinner was over, I took the pieces of the shell back into the kitchen, got on the floor, and I tried to put the lobster back together. I'm told that I was horrified and in tears because I could not bring that lobster back to life. And I still remember it. The sixth source. Spiritual teachings of earth-centered traditions, which celebrate the sacred circle of life and instruct us to live in harmony with the rhythms of nature. Now, when I first read Rich's story, the words of the sixth source resonated with me quite powerfully, because it is a source that particularly speaks to our relationship with the earth, its inhabitants, and really the universe. The sacred circle of life includes life and death. And Rich, I would imagine by your age, whatever it might be, you've seen it any number of times. The epiphany seemed to be that he felt he broke that sacred circle by killing the rabbit and cutting short its life, a life of innocence, and then done. And he made a conscious decision not to hunt again. As the Jewish Torah says, you will choose life. And you did. Now, Rich, I hope I haven't, and forgive the pun here, I hope I haven't butchered your story too much. This is just one story of the many we all carry in life, stories of peak experiences that fundamentally change who we are, and we didn't know until we had the experience. For example, people have told me about they meet someone and they realize, this is the person I want to be in love with the rest of my life. That happened to me and Deborah, as a matter of fact, and maybe it's happened to you as well over time. Those are epiphany moments. Those are moments when we go, oh, I see, I understand. Now, this coming spring, I'm going to do a number of services on the sources, each one, in coming months, probably one a month. I'm asking us, how do the sources help us understand the seven principles, our own values as people, but also our values as a religious community, and how we can live together on this earth in more peace than in war? And one subject I hope to consider is how the six sources affect the story of this church from its past to its future through the present moment. So before we have the offering, let's do a short time of reflection to consider Rich's story. Have we had epiphany moments that have changed our lives? What did they teach us? What do the sources help us understand from those moments? I'll just leave you with a quick example. I've realized in the last year that I am, in theory, retiring. What? What's retirement? But I've slowly become aware that it is a new stage in my life that is unknown to me. And so a lot of time that I do in meditation and reflection is, what does this mean? How does it feel? And do I have to control it? So whatever it might be from your lives as a powerful moment, an epiphany moment, a peak experience, or just a recognition of something very powerful you hadn't known before in your heart, not your head. So let's take a few moments and have some quiet time before we start the offering.